How high do you start?
I think at sea level.
You do start at sea level.
All right.
Or like elevation 10.
I'm going to call this meeting to order. Thank you all for coming. Would you all please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Kate, would you please call the roll?
Yes, I'd be glad to do that. Okay, Chair First.
Here.
Mary Beth Bishy.
Here.
Dean DiGiovanni.
Here.
Meg Oberstein.
Here.
Thomas Gaffney.
Here.
And Dan Hilmer.
Here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Agenda item 3 is open time for public participation. This is the time we have set aside for members of the public to speak on items not on tonight's agenda. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak? Seeing none, we will move on to the consent calendar. The purpose of the consent calendar is to approve in one motion items that are considered routine. Any member of the board, the staff, or the public may remove an item for discussion. Would anybody like to remove anything? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion for items 4A through 4J.
One item first is that we have a handout for item 4F, which is the base salary schedules for fiscal year 19. The difference is that the associate engineer was added. That's a new position because someone was promoted into that vacancy. And we removed the maintenance repair worker 2 and 3. That was a classification that we replaced with a mechanical technician years ago, but we had, you know, a few employees that didn't want to move to the new classification, and the last one retired last year. So we no longer need that classification. So we need to remove that from the salary schedule also.
Okay. Thank you. All right. If there are no other questions or nobody wants to remove anything, I will entertain a motion for 2 through 4A through 4J.
We approve 4A through 4J. Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No? Unanimous. Thank you.
Madam Chairman, do you think we ought to move item 6 up?
Is that a motion?
I move that we move item 6.
Thank you. Next. Okay, there's a motion on the floor to change the order of the agenda tonight to move item number 6 up, because I believe that's of concern to several people in the audience. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None. All right, let's move on to agenda item 6, participation in the Marine Clean Energy Deep Green Program.
Okay, thank you, Chair First. So this item was discussed during public open time at the meeting in May, and we had two members of the public that were here spoke to the item. One is in the audience tonight, Lee Marsh, who I've talked to a few times about participation in Marine Clean Energy Deep Green. And so her and her colleague had discussed the benefits of being in Deep Green, noted that the county and the 11 cities and towns and a few special districts joined the Deep Green program with MCE, and they talked about the benefits of being a member of Deep Green and encourage the board to support Deep Green and authorize the agency to join it. And also, later they also spoke during the draft fiscal year 19 budget discussion and suggested including funds in the budget so we could pay for the additional procurement from Deep Green. At the end of the budget discussion, the board directed staff to obtain a proposal from Marine Clean Energy to move from the light green program to the Deep Green program. And we knew that it was 1 cent per kilowatt hour more was the unit cost for that entire procurement of the renewable 100% Deep Green program. So I contacted Marine Clean Energy, and they produced sent us over by email this attachment to the staff report, which has a little bit of information. It has our energy usage for the last 12 months. You know, we produce about, 97% of our own energy here with our cogeneration system, but because of the control systems, we always have to procure a small amount of electricity. So last year that amounted to about 316 kilowatt hours, and that's from end of April of 17 through end of April of 18. Then you see you have emission factor information for light green and also for deep green. Light green was 90,000, I guess that's carbon dioxide equivalents, and deep green is zero. And based on the unit cost for deep green and our usage for the last 12-month period, April, the estimated cost for CMSA to participate would be an additional $3,100. And also on this sheet, it shows some of the benefits that MC prepared for participating in deep green. So that is the staff report and the information that you asked that I procure for you.
Thank you. Any questions of Jason?
Yes. I have questions. Jason, as you know, I asked you to do some more research into the basis for the zero emissions. I'm trying to understand how it is that CMSA, who would have a particularly large peak, like, for example, in the wintertime during a storm event when all of our pumps would be running, and how that would work, that type of a peak event would work to be served by the renewable energy. And I understand that the response you got back from MCE was that there was intermittent non-renewable power. Did we get any further definition of what that means?
No. So essentially, Mary Beth Bushy asked a question about the zero emissions for participation in MCE Deep Green. And so after that conversation, I contacted Chris Kubrick over at MCE, and she provided a lot of information. And she talked really fast, and I took notes. And she even offered to come to the meeting tonight. And I said, well, we'll have the discussion, and if it gets carried forward to the next month, I could let her know, maybe she can come in. But what this is kind of my summary and kind of paraphrasing what she said. I should have took more notes. But so she said that the Deep Green program right now is 50% wind and 50% solar. That's the renewable sources of power. And that right now, under contracts they have for procuring the renewable energy, they have about 178 gigawatts of contracted power. And he said that she talked a little bit about base load not being included in that, so their the time of maximum procurement doesn't line up with the time of maximum demand. And she said something to the effect that, as Commissioner Bushy mentioned, that at times there's intermittent power that's added to the portfolio. So I had the example that we had talked about on the phone. Say, for instance, it's the middle of the winter and it's been cloudy, you know, for a month or so, and it's in the middle of the night and there's a major rainstorm, our cogeneration system's offline, and we need to procure, you know, 3/4 of a megawatt, which is assuming like everything's online here and we have a maximum power demand. And we're in Deep Green, so we're purchasing all the power from Deep Green, which is great. How do we know that it's really zero emissions when, you know, 50% of their renewable sources from wind and 50% from solar, and there hasn't been much wind activity or solar activity during, maybe a little bit of wind, but less solar, so maybe it could meet all of our demand. How do we know that it's really from 100% renewable at any given time, like for that type of event? And she said, well, that's a good question. She said that there's intermittent that's added to it. And I said, so that mean there may be like natural gas, you know, derived power that's part of the mix? And she said, yeah. You know, which I understood that because, you know, all the power just kind of moves around through the whole system. So you're just getting any power that can be delivered, you know, to you from local sources that's available. So we kind of talked about that a little bit. But she said that's kind of what happened. So there's no, you know, assurance that at any point in time during the day or during the year it's always 100% renewable. But she did say that they have certifications, and there's a Green E certification, and there's a process and methodology to do the calculation to obtain that, and they meet that. And that includes, you know, using some intermittent for their customers. And it's more on an accounting basis that they account for. We have this much demand and this much available, and over a period of time, it's all, you know, Deep Green, 100% renewable. And then she also talked about the emissions, that there are specific greenhouse gas accounting rules and calculations to determine that. and that the Deep Green program meets those requirements also. We didn't get into a discussion of either of those programs or what were the certification requirements. So anyway, that's kind of some of the summary of the information that I received from Chris. So I could take any specific questions from the board, or you could send me questions and I could forward them to Chris to get more information, or if you wanted to talk about it again, I'm sure she'd come into the July meeting.
I have a question.
And I just have a follow-up, because I went and looked to see the certification process, and I was really surprised to see on the certification website that is called Verification Service, which shows for Marin Clean Energy, for it's a Deep Green, that it's comprised of 50% wind and 23% solar, which is only 73% renewable. That's what it shows on the website. And it says for something called Local Sol, that is 100% solar. And the name of the verification service is greene.org. And I found that's what they show on the MCE website. So I guess I'd like to understand how that all works together. What is this intermittent use of non-renewables, and what does the 73% mean, particularly in the context of CMSA, which is already 97% renewable? So I'm thinking, those are my questions. I don't know if we have an answer. If we don't have and I don't expect you to have answers. But right. So maybe we could get Chris to come and explain how that actually works. That concludes my questions.
Excellent
Dan?
I have been following Marin Clean Energy since the beginning. And and the city of Larkspur's position on whether to be a customer have evolved. And when we came to the understanding that they were using, I don't know what the percentage is, but their reinvestment program to local projects create more renewable, closer to the consumer in terms of distance. We changed to be supportive of it, even though we saw them still growing toward their goal and still having to do what they do now that you're asking questions about to get there. So I'm interested in hearing the answers to your questions, certainly. But I also would like to know what their reinvestment, a certain amount of the revenues goes toward local projects, 15%, something like that. I'd like to know what that currently is.
Yes.
Well, I have a comment. You said they have 170 megawatts that they generate.
Gigawatts.
Gigawatts. Okay, good. And thousand times off.
Generate. They purchase.
They purchased that.
They purchased it
from sources. Yeah.
So they have contracts for that much. And so is it that sometimes they use 170 gigawatts? Go to people, or users that aren't participating in the 100% green program, and that then, in those occasions, like in the middle of the night when we have to get selling natural gas generated power, they offset it with that. Do you understand my question? Mm-hmm. Sometimes their customers that have signed up for the 100% green may not be using 170. Gigawatts.
Yeah. So
is that the way others. It works? Or?
I'm not quite sure how they account for everything, and how the actual demand of the users aligns with their generation, timing. I don't know anything about that, but I know they're not synced up because they don't have the baseload component.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I recall when we were discussing this at the Corte Madera Town Council that there was an explanation about the fact that all of the electrons from both green energy sources as well as your non-renewables all wind up in the grid, and they're all commingled. So the actual electrons that are traveling through the over the grid into your facility to light your light, nobody really knows exactly where the source of that is, of course. But the point of the 100% deep green is really an economic one. It is using your money to support the purchase of 100% green energy, so-called, although we obviously need to get some more answers on the specifics and how they account for that. But it is to support the purchase of green energy.
Production.
Yeah. So acknowledging, of course, you're not going to have solar-powered electrons just coming over the grid in the middle of the night.
If we voted for this, it's you can opt out at any time.
My understanding is right.
Without any penalty?
That's my understanding.
Dean?
I just have one comment. I wasn't here in the last discussion in 2015 when this came up, but if there was an appetite for it on the board, we didn't recognize it at all in our budgeting and in our business plan, which is included in the meeting agenda here tonight. Goal 3 doesn't mention anything with regards to which is all about renewables and green energy and stuff. And we don't have anything even in there on this. So come in with I would like a little bit more planning for that, even though it's only $3,000 on a budget breaker, but certainly when we're using ratepayers' money, it's good to have those goals outlined and encompassed in our documents on what we're all about and what we want to do. So anyhow, that's my comment.
Okay.
It seems to me that my feeling is that it's a good thing to do. It doesn't have to happen tonight. And that at the end of the day, if we're producing 97% of our own power, and if even 78% of that last 3% is green, it's a very minute piece, but I'd still like the answer to the questions that were asked. Even if it's a 2% at the end, or 1% at the end of the day, these are good questions, and it's good to have it be known. So I'm not in a giant rush to make it happen this evening. And I would like, if that lady were here, we could ask those questions.
Well, the board would like I could include this on the July agenda, you know, assuming that Ms. Kubrick could attend the meeting or another representative from MCE. Mm-hmm. And I have the four questions here that I can email to her so she can prepare for it with our specific example and, you know, the questions are intermittent and others.
Okay, I'm going to open it up for public comment in just a minute, but before I do, for the benefit of the folks that aren't familiar with our agency and the CoGen system, Jason, would you be able to give a 15-second overview? All right, 30-second overview.
That long?
Of what we're doing. Make it 10.
Okay, so in short, we process the wastewater solids and we receive other organic materials here at the agency. Those are digested in an aerobic digester. It produces a biogas. We clean and filter the biogas, and the biogas is used as a fuel in an engine generation system, like an engine, like your car. But it uses the biogas as fuel. And then the engine is attached to a generator, and that generator is connected to a power distribution system that powers everything at the facility. So right now, it varies day to day, but right now we're probably generating maybe 23 hours a day of our own power from the biogas. Then the other hour, we purchase, say, natural gas to use in the engine, and then we always have to purchase a little bit of electricity. Like I mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, it's because of the control system and specific requirements in our interconnection agreement that we can't export the power. But once we have the improvements made with the interconnection project, then we should be able to export. That was a minute and 10 seconds.
Yeah, you did.
Short comment. And so we have a project. We're working with Marin Clean Energy to increase the capacity of our electrical generation, which we're going to sell to Marin Clean Energy. So, you know, we're a step beyond what most agencies are doing.
several steps.
Yes.
Many steps, yeah. It's a tough process. And we can state for the record that Marin Clean Energy was tough to negotiate with, that they were, at least in our case, I felt they were inflexible with, you know, what our situation was. That's my own opinion.
Right. But that's a different...
That's a topic. Yeah.
Would the interconnection project change the ins and outs of the costs that are before us tonight?
No, because if we have to buy power, it'll either be under the rate schedule for light green or deep green, and that, you know, varies based on the season, the time of day.
But as we export, you know, in the future to Marin Clean Energy, would that offset this $3,100?
Yeah, like, would we, in essence, produce 100%? If we've increased our capacity, are we likely to...
Well, you know, whatever energy we sell is going to be, you know, revenue, and at some point, if we have to buy some, then it'll be an expense. So, you know, in accounting perspective, they'll, you know, one will be revenue, one will be expense, and hopefully the revenues are a lot bigger than the expenses. So that's our goal, to be energy self-sufficient and be continuously delivering power. But, you know, things can happen, you know, the organic, you know,
my loads. My question is, based on the larger picture of working together in the future, is worrying about this $3,100 in addition, you know, over the competitors... For the reason of this agenda item, does that reduce the significance of that?
I think that's a good question for the board. You know, from staff.
You understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, it's from us. It's just, you know, revenues and expenses, right? This is more like a policy type question, I think.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that in deliberations, I think. Okay. If there are no more questions of staff, let's open it up for public comment. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes, and if you just want to kind of stand up front and introduce yourself, and next person, get ready to go right after.
I'm Helene Marsh. I'm in Puerto Madero District, Senator District Number 2, and I was here last month, and I really want to thank you for putting this onto the agenda for discussion. And to Commissioner Gaffney's point, I really value what you're doing here, because we've spent a fair bit of time now at all the wastewater districts learning about what they are or aren't doing on the renewable energy front, so we do respect very much what you're doing. And I, as you've already heard from me, I fully support CMSA going to deep green, and I believe that you've received some letters from other members of the various different districts, and we also have a group of supporters here. If you could raise your hands if you're in support of going to deep green. So I'd like to hand out I just have a handout here for you, which is just all the agencies which are deep green, so you can hand that around. And so I would ask you to join the other 19 government agencies in Marin that purchase deep green, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Sarah Loughran. I'm part of Sanitary District, or Santa Fe Sanitary District. And I echo what Helene said about what you've done so far. I remember touring, I was on the grand jury about 4 years ago, and touring the facility and just being amazed. So I think that's wonderful. And really, I'm here today to say, ask you to just take that final step for that 3% of your electricity that you do buy, making sure that's 100% renewable, so that all the electricity you use is 100% renewable. You know, I can't necessarily comment to Board Member Bushy's statement about what Green E Energy says. I know that MCE claims everywhere that the Deep Green project is 100% renewable energy. And in essence, that means that the electrons that are going on to the grid on your behalf are 100% renewable. My understanding, that's 50% wind and 50% solar. And I think it's important also, Board Member, I think as Homer pointed out, talked a little bit about the reinvestment projects, and that is part of what MCE has said, that this 1 cent per kilowatt premium goes into reinvestment. So I know one of the projects that's gone into is the MCE Solar One facility over in Richmond, which opened about 2 months ago, which used a lot of local labor to create a 1 megawatt facility, I think, which is extremely impressive. But by going to Duke Green, you will reduce your greenhouse gas emissions to zero immediately. You will cost effectively continue your mission, which part is to protect the environment and the public health. And you'll also continue to show the type of leadership that you have shown and that the nation needs to reduce greenhouse gas emissions that cause global warming. So please vote to go to Deep Green. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Tom Flynn, and I'm a Larkspur resident and a customer of Ross Valley Sanitary District. And I'm here in support of your going Deep Green, and I really respect some of your questions. I think they're excellent questions, and I really don't want to speak for the staff of MCE. I'm not up to date with all of their, you know, their latest accounting or you know their sourcing of their supply and so forth. But I want to, in response to some of your really intelligent questions, I want to just point out that we do have storage today, and it's becoming more and more of a factor. So when there are times that we don't have as much solar and wind input, we're moving more and more to having stored power. And also, the certification relates to essentially purchasing credits of buying renewable energy that's not just used in this district, but that's used elsewhere. Now, that's actually being phased out, and again, I can't speak to MCE's position at this time with respect to all those, but I do want to say that from what I've seen, the efforts by MCE have been very respectable in terms of accounting for providing a green product, in particular a 100% renewable product. And I think that commitment continues both with what you're trying to do and what they're trying to do, and the fact that you're producing more, you're ultimately going to produce more than you use, as Council Member Hilmer has pointed out. I think ultimately this is in a sense a symbolic gesture that you're making, that you are supporting this concept of Deep Green, and when you do have to buy power, you want it to be as green as possible. So I don't know how much time I have to speak to, but do I have another minute?
You have a minute.
A minute, okay. So
I've got a timer in here.
Okay, great. Well, I just wanted to cover the points here that I'm here because I, like you, am deeply concerned about climate change and all of its effects, and particularly on some of the most vulnerable parts of the world, like Bangladesh and places in Africa and Central America that are resulting in refugees from that climate crisis. And I know that you previously considered opting before, but now, it looks as though with your reduction of use, you're down to this estimate of $3,162. And I know that you've all done a lot with energy efficiency, and if you do a little bit more, that $3,100 projection could even be less. In general, I just think that faced with the tremendous dramatic climate change impacts to Marin and the rest of the world, let's get on board. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, I can't top those folks, but I want to add some passion. I mean, I have children, grandchildren, and I love all the children. I think of children in India, the songs and the. So we've got to join with other communities who gave great deep thought when those boards of the different towns here in Marin County gave quite deep thought to it and investigated, and so they took the step, and I really urge all of you to take the step moving toward 100%. It's not just, it will, I'm really shocked to hear that it wasn't 50-50, because everything they put out, and I don't know how they can put it out saying that it's 50% solar, 50% wind, so I'm really questioning why there are two stories. So I intend to go with I already did go 100% in my home, and I'm pushing my church to do so, and I'm with Marin Interfaith Climate Action joins all the churches, and what we're trying to do in Marin Faith Climate Action is to get the churches to go 100% green. So I really strongly urge you to go continue your leadership with what you're doing with the food to waste, food to energy program. And the other thing with Marin Clean Energy, 50% of the proceeds from Deep Green go to continuing the work in Cooley, the Cooley Quandary, Quanta Quandary, there in Novato, and then bring Solar One in Richmond. So they want to put money into these things and need money to do it. So I truly urge you to opt in. 100%.
Is there anybody else who would like to speak to this? Seeing none, let's bring it back to the board. Who would like to start? Dan.
I think bringing information back so we can answer the questions is the best approach. I believe myself, to speak for myself, it's a question of an expression of leadership at this point. But I want to respect the questions that were asked and give everybody a fair hearing.
Thank you.
I guess I feel very similar. at our district in Wells Valley, we did support the 100% green energy program. And I think the cost is extremely nominal for us. And, it's a good idea to answer questions. And I don't have any problem with that. We could, I would be willing to vote for it. And if we don't get questions that are, we don't get good answers to our question, we can always drop out.
Okay, thank you.
As Commissioner Gaffney just said, at the Ross Valley Sanitary District, we voted to do this. I'm very, very much in favor of doing it, championing it. But these are very good questions. There's no fire to do this. I think I feel that. I sense that we all feel the same, and with our cogeneration program that we've done, but we've always been supportive of this. And those are good questions. I don't think if 4 weeks from now, it's not going to change anything in either direction. And I can't imagine that the answers that we'll get will change my mind. But I would like to hear the answers, because those are very good questions.
Thank you. Dean?
I would like to hear the answers to the questions before we take a vote. But also, I have another one. The $3,000 incrementally, Jason, what would that do if we invested that just in ourselves to spur along this 100% renewable here at our own facility? Is there anything?
Not too much.
No.
But Jason? We will never be at 100%, correct? Because we will always need to schedule some downtime of the cogen system and draw energy off the grid, right?
Yeah, so for that kind of example, we say we're 100% energy self-sufficient. We're just hitting that target. There is, preventative maintenance requirements on the existing cogen system. Like, for example, the most frequent ones, every 2,000 hours, it has to be taken out of service, spark plugs be changed, lubricants to be replaced, air filters, things like that. And that takes, a few hours. It's scheduled during the off-peak period. But during that, for that example, during that time, we'd be purchasing deep green power or light green power. But in the future, we have a plan. It's actually in the CIP, and we part of what we're hoping to be a future debt issuance is to buy a more efficient cogeneration system for an open bay and have that run full-time producing these power. Then we have the current system, which has been very well maintained, as a backup. So when either one needs preventive maintenance, there'd be another system to continue producing power. So that's kind of like a plan in a couple of years.
So we might be 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I think this isn't a real time-sensitive issue. No. I have no problem putting this off for another month in order to get the questions answered. But I will say that I very much support Deep Green. I recognize the concept of getting solar energy in the middle of the night is not one that, you know, is easy to wrap your head around. But I believe in making the economic decision to have our dollars go to Deep Green, which is something that furthers our mission to be responsible stewards of, you know, of this agency and of the community. So let's get some answers and talk about it in a month. That is, if somebody would like to make a motion to continue this until July's meeting.
Then we continue this until July's meeting, and then we get some very specific answers to the questions of the board here, the commission, and bring it back. And I personally am sure that in June there won't be an issue.
July. We're already in June.
I know.
It's hard to
have that happen.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That passes. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate the comments.
Thank you for your service, everyone.
Thank you.
If you want to see how much we produce, there's a chart in our packet here. And you can see that we buy very little in a month. We're not going to be buying very much.
Actually, there's a new TV screen in the lobby. Yeah. It has a power generation, you know, page. You can look and see what power is being generated real time and what's used in different parts of the plant.
Oh, nice. Exciting. Thank you.
What I forgot to say was I would hope you would go to your Green Girls because I think it's really important for you as examples for other people, other government agencies, example of that. And a voice for you to impact MCE. If you think they're not doing things right, you know, you can then threaten to drop out. That would be a black mark on them. So that's another reason.
Thank you. Okay, let's go back and pick up on agenda item number 5, data management system project status report.
Okay, I'll be really brief on my part of the presentation. So we started a data management system project last spring, which was kind of preparing RFPs, sending it to vendors of data management systems, reviewing those, selecting, you know, the best vendors, got proposals from them. Then I came to the board in September. Mark Kokomar, our lab director, gave a really nice presentation of our existing data management systems, what the new systems would provide in terms of benefits to the agency, efficiencies, and other, a lot of other, you know, good rationale to move toward it. The board supported the procurement. It had a budget of about $130,000. You know, Mark was project manager, led a team of staff to, you know, install the software, get it running, migrate all the data from the existing systems to the new databases, to develop, you know, different reports, trending screens, you know, the information on the TV screen outside. Some of the reports that are in the agenda packet are generated now with the new information management system. And it's been a real successful project. So we figured that since it was a pretty good size, you know, procurement, and it was pretty successful, that I had asked Mark to come in and highlight the project and go through all the information in these binders here with you.
Thank you. I'm sorry we put you off one agenda item, Mark.
That's great to hear all the happenings of the agency. So
you were outnumbered in the office.
Appreciate it. Can you turn the So as we met last year, my name is Mark Kokomar, I'm the lab director, and one of the tasks that I was asked to put together was the data management system for our agency. As we prepared the project, we looked at the way we ran our existing data management systems throughout our facility, and we noted that we have three primary areas: a SCADA system, which is linked to our operational parameters throughout the plant, and it brings in data, and then we also have an operations department, and they collect data throughout the whole plant, and they bring it in, and they put it in an Excel database as well, too. And then we in the lab, we put together regulatory data as well as process control data that we also put into Excel. And we had these three different Excel databases that we would then basically compile a report every year and every month for whether it was for our board here or for the regulatory boards that we needed to provide data to. One of the things that we noted was that, I won't go through each one, was that we had definite improvements that we were looking at that we could potentially optimize. One of the major ones was single user access. Only one person could be on the database at any given time. So this was all these improvements were potentials for us.
It's just like the 70s.
So we came out and we put together what we wanted to get. We wanted to have a database that could basically speak to all the other systems out there, but also talk to each other. So we looked at a plant database that would look at the overarching data that we needed to run our facility, be able to run calculations. And then we also needed to have a more detail-oriented LIMS database, which is for the lab, because you're looking at sample times and quality control that you didn't need to house necessarily for the facility, but we needed to have that information for regulatory reporting as well, too. So, as Jason mentioned, we came to you last September, and we put forward a project budget of $130,000 to put these two systems together. This went through an RFP process, and we looked at various systems, and they were primarily the most cost-effective systems that we could get here at our facility. So tonight, I wanted to show you just a little bit of what's happened over the last year.
And there's handouts of.
Yeah, so before you probably have something that looks a little bit like this.
Can I get my handout?
Yeah, sure. and the reason for this is I wanted to show you a little bit about hands-on, what we actually do, and how it's impacted us. On the left-hand side, and with you, is the old TSS bench sheet. A lot of our samples are solids concentration, so we're measuring the amount of solids that come into the plant, and the amount of solids throughout the facility, and those solids that leave the facility. And so we're collecting samples, we bring them in, and we have this little dish that has a filter in it, and we would measure the dish, the crucible, and we would write down the measurement, and on the left-hand side there you would see that initial measurement, and we would have to write down the data each time. And then we would filter the sample, and then we'd dry it, and then we'd bring it back out, and we'd write it down again. And then our lab analyst would then go and calculate the data, and they would produce a TSS result. And so that's what we used to do. Today, we have the LIMS system. The samples get brought in. It creates a bench sheet that looks like that one on the right there. And our balance that we measure the weight on is connected to the system. So you just, on the balance, you press a print button, and it automatically transfers the values that you see straight into the system. So there is no writing down of any numbers. There's no entry of any numbers. There's no transcription potential issues. And so an amazing efficiency increase just in the analyst's production. So they do that. And then once the results have all been analyzed, they hit. There's a calculate button. They hit a calculate button, and it calculates all the results. So they don't have to do any of the calculations by hand anymore. There's no potential for errors. And then once they've calculated, they basically select another button, and it automatically imports the data into the system. There's no having to enter any of the data. One of the once the data is in the system, we used to, last year, we would have to then, once we've calculated everything, we would write down all the results on the left-hand sheet that you see there, that old daily process control sheet. We would write down the results so that way we could get it to our operations department, and then we would take those results, and I don't have the sheet up here for you, we would type them up, so that our plant manager, Chris Fenton, and Jason, and those, our engineering manager, they would all get the results on a day-to-day basis. And so we would take all these results, write them down for operations, type them up for the various departments, and so it would be done two or three times to get the results to where they needed to go.
And this was a year ago.
This was a year.
2017.
That's what we were
doing. Nine months ago.
With punch cards. So you see how the project was very beneficial for the agency. It saves a lot of time and effort and
accuracy.
Potential for errors. Improved accuracy.
The efficiency, accuracy, this is just...
It's changed the way we do this.
It's out
there. Now the new system, it produces the new bench sheet that you see on the right hand side there, and you can go into the system and you can print this out. You can look at it at any time of the day. It also gets emailed out, so when I'm bored on Saturdays, I get an email from the system, and I get to look at the results, how the plant is doing on the weekends.
I look at mine too on the weekends. I really do.
So we get all the results, and it's seamless, and you don't have to worry about any data entry issues, any calculation issues, because they're all run in the background behind the system.
So the sheet on the right, Mark, is generated by... the WIMS, using the data from the WIMS. So it transfers data from one database to the other for the customized report.
And
so
this is all now shown in real time out in the lobby.
Yes.
Selected information, yes.
Select information. So this system here is run by the Promium LIM system, the lab data system. And this one here is done by the Hawk WIMS system. And it produces the data for the operations.
And they can feed each other, right?
They can feed each other. We can have data going back and forth. And it's seamless. You don't have to transfer data or anything like that. Every 15 minutes, the database from the WIMS system looks for new data out of the LIM system and pulls it across if there's new data available. All said and done, for the $130,000 that we had for both of the projects, we came in below budget. Well, finalized expenditures was $109,000, which was about 17% lower than what we had projected.
On time, below budget.
And this is really going to commit Mark here because, you know, the contracts for each of the vendors, you know, is for buying the software, then there are all these services associated with it. And we were able to reduce the cost on the services because Mark was, you know, familiar with the software, had experience with these databases at his prior employer, so that ended up being an extra value to the agency.
So didn't you say that this can print the reports that have to go to the regional board, doesn't this actually prints what we use?
It actually produces electronic reports that are automatically uploaded into the regional board's database. So there is no having to hand enter anything. The last thing that I wanted to show you, and I'm just going to have to exit just for a second, just so that you can all see. This is my Hawk. This is essentially like the lobby dashboard that you see out on the screen outside. This is my personalized one. It's a lot busier because I'm a lot more into the details of the numbers. However, for instance, this is your board report that you receive. So every month when we now put board reports together, it's automatic and we don't have to run any of the calculations or enter any values. We now just click a button, and I can send the reports to Jason as needed. Part of this data, this report, is last year, you see here, and I brought this so you could see, this is the flow data. Every day we would print out, we would go to our SCADA system, and we would print out flow data. And our analyst would then go and review the data, and you can see by the tabs what issues that maybe came up that we needed to question or correct. And then they would enter the values into the Excel database. So at the end of the year, this is from 2017, all the flow data would then be transferred from our lab database to the operational database. Now that is no longer required. We don't enter any flow data. flow data is automatically transferred from our flow meters to our SCADA system and direct into the Hawkman system. So no longer do we have to house binders full of flow data. It saves a huge amount of time for efficiency and addresses potential transcription errors. So you're probably wondering, what are we doing with all our time nowadays? We're looking for ways to optimize the lab, looking for ways to optimize the facility. So we've actually begun bringing in additional analyses that might help operations. One of the things that we've brought in is chemical oxygen demand. We're now running those in-house. That provides us like BOD results that we can get same day versus having to wait 5 days. We're doing a nitrogen analysis, so we're looking at nitrates and nitrites and total phosphorus. And so we're looking to bring in other analyses that could potentially help us and mitigate any issues that come our way that we need to address quickly.
And perform various optimization studies in the facility, right?
Yes, we're looking at the end of this, towards the end of this year, we're going to be kicking into a digester study to look at different percentages of fog and food waste relative to our existing organic waste that we, well, sorry, our activated sludge waste. So we'll be assessing that through a digester study as well.
And these will be small digesters that our staff will build, and they'll operate in the lab, and we'll seed them with that, with the digested sludge, and operate them in there, maintain the temperature. Then we'll have a kind of like, you know, the control digester, and the other digester will start feeding at higher percentages of fog to see at what point you have an upset of the digester because the chemistry becomes imbalanced. So there's a lot of cool stuff the lab's doing with their extra time.
Yeah, well, that sounds good.
You could do that with all your systems, couldn't you? You could, like, change the air coming into the secondary clarifier or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
See if you lower it, what happens.
Yes, there are so many potential optimization studies that we have on our list that we would like to get to and things that we would like to do, and this is just providing us opportunities. So.
Well, this might be, you might be able to bring down our consumption by 3% and meet us.
It only costs $5 on Deep Green.
But a question on... The flow meters are now even more important. Didn't we have a problem with flow meters?
We were questioning the accuracy of our effluent flow measurement device, and that was based on a weir.
That's right.
And then we eventually, did a bunch of testing with temporary flow meters during the dry season, the wet season, compared those with influent flows, with flows from the secondary system, and with what was existing at the weirs, and had some expert process experts come out, and we replaced the weirs we had with a different style of weir with a sharper crest and contractions that improved the accuracy of the flow. Then we did another study where we tried to correlate the actual weir calculation with what we measured at the temporary contact tank and secondary flow measurement devices. And we refined that a couple times to where now the effluent flow calculation is much closer to the influent flow measured value. They'll never be 100% perfect because influent flow meters are sized for these giant pipelines, so there's a margin of error in the measurement, and then there's always error in the empirical calculation that the weir coefficient's based on. But they've tightened up a lot through these improvements.
Yes. Great, so we're getting good data coming in.
Yeah.
Influential.
Can you tell me if we had some talk a while back with at our district, Ross Valley, about using your lab more for our lab needs because we were sending stuff all over the place.
Yeah.
Are we doing that right now? And are there any tests that you can think of that Ross Valley needs to do that couldn't be done here?
I'm not familiar with all the tests that Ross Valley would need to do, except for measuring, if there's an overflow to determine if there was ammonia and other compounds in the water that would at the Regional Water Board. Well, it's not even the Regional Water Board anymore, is it? It's the...
Under the WDR, the SSR requirements include...
Office of Emergency Services, right?
Yes.
In the Marin County Environmental Health Services.
Yeah, and they do have requirement testing for any potential SSOs, and they have to be done within a specific time period and so forth.
It's ammonia, right, and then also BOD?
Total coliform,
that's right.
Yes. Yeah.
And those can all be done here?
Yes, they can all be done here.
Felicia, do you know whether we talked about... We're sending it all over the place.
Are we sending it to...
We were.
I have not read... Since I have been here since 2017, I haven't received any samples. So that's just speaking from my experience.
So we do samples for SD2 and SRSD?
Yeah, we do sulfide monitoring currently, and right now we are doing lagoon sampling. Well, not lagoon sampling, but lagoon testing for total coliform.
Yeah, and that's done for the town of Corte Madera.
Thank you.
And the sulfide is done for San Rafael Sanitation.
Mm-hmm. Were we doing stuff for Novato and Las Colinas at one point?
We have a separate contract with Novato to kind of administer their mercury reduction source control program. Then we have a contract with Las Colinas to administer and manage their pollution prevention program, which includes fat oils and grease source control. But they have both have their own laboratories, so they do their own laboratory analyses.
Okay. Great job.
Thank you.
Well, thanks,
you.
Mark.
Thank you. I have one question, though. I love that this is all automated and clean and all the data sharing. Really terrific. But what would happen if there was a systems crash or something? Will we ensure that we have a redundancy and staff that is capable of doing this manually if we ever found ourselves in a situation where we needed to do that?
Yeah, so the data is backed up currently. It goes from one server to the next and is backed up every single night. And that data is available should one of the servers crash. And that's what we do have currently on as a backup.
These are virtual servers, and we have a server rack in this building that has multiple virtual servers on it. Yeah. Then we have an entirely backup server in our solids handling building with all the same data. So, like, if there's some vandalism here or, you know, caught on fire in this building, we'd still have everything in the backup server.
Now, does that include both the data and the software itself?
The software itself for our data management systems are available because we have set up contracts with the agencies. If something were to happen, we could download the software for free at any location because there is we have a maintenance contract, and they provide... like, for instance, the Promium element system is, they oftentimes provide updates to their software. Usually once every other month, they'll provide an update. The Hawk WIMS is about twice a year. So they actually just, we just updated our system 2 months ago.
So that software resides locally. It's not in the cloud, correct?
It's locally. Okay. They just look for... you have the system look for an update, and then if the update's available, you install the update.
I would just simply recommend that you consider maybe maintaining the old manuals that maybe talk about the process, so that if just on the off chance there was ever a major breakdown of either Promium or is it Hawk, that at least, you know, we'd be functional and can meet our regulatory requirements for all the different testing.
We do have, you know, standard operating procedures for every test that is performed in the laboratory.
Right.
Detailed procedures and then summary procedures. So we have all that in writing on how to do it.
I would think you would, so.
Yeah. In the systems, we should keep the old spreadsheet systems just on disk so that way if something happens, we can always have those available.
And some people have a historical on exhibit. And we'll need
a history museum.
With the punch cards.
That's not a slide rule.
Do a lot of wastewater agencies do this, or are we
Yeah, the majority, you've over the last few months, you've heard about like TNI coming out. It's a new requirement for lab. That's one of the reasons that we're hiring a new lab analyst. That has kind of forced a lot of labs to consider a LIMS system. When I was at Napa and, Benicia and various other plants, they all have these types of systems that they use. Varying types, but some sort of system that's available. Okay.
Would any member of the public like to speak to this?
Okay. Great job.
Thank you, Mark. This was simply informational. You didn't need anything from us on this.
That's correct.
All right, thank you. Let's move on to agenda item 7, fiscal year 2017-18 business plan year-end report.
Thank you. So, you know, back in July of 2016, the board adopted the agency's 5-year strategic business plan. And that plan has a vision for the agency, a mission, core values, and 6 organizational goals. And part of the strategic plan is for the staff to prepare and the board to adopt an annual business plan. So the first business plan was for fiscal year 17, and we produced the year report last year. And then in July of last year, the board approved the fiscal year 18 business plan. And the business plan has objectives and more detailed, you know, what we call strategic actions that allow the agency to achieve the organizational goals and align with the vision, the mission, and the core values. So what we have attached to the staff report is the fiscal year 18 business plan annual report. And on the table of staff report, you see there were 82 specific, you know, activities or initiatives that were included in the FY18 plan. All were initiated, 61 were completed, and 21 are either ongoing because they're routine or they're a project that's maybe in progress that hasn't been completed yet. So just kind of highlight a few things. Everything in the annual report is great information, and I just commend all of our staff and our agency planning committee for moving all these initiatives forward. But just highlighting on in goal 1, we had 100% permit compliance for the fiscal year. We have a good NPDES permits, you know, from our perspective. That was better than our prior permits. Then we finished the construction of our maintenance facility modifications, and all the staff have moved in, which was great. Under goal 2, we received, you know, awards from the Government Finance Officer Association for our budget, for our comprehensive annual financial report, and for our popular annual financial report. We've prepared a multi-year revenue plan with the Finance Committee that was adopted by the board. That was a lot of work and a great work product. We did, under goal 3, we received a $560,000 Green Project Reserve loan with 75% forgiveness for a series of studies and projects from the State Water Board. We also have the power sale agreement with Marin Clean Energy so that we can start selling power when we have it available. Under goal 4, we have a new 5-year food waste processing agreement for the food energy program with Marin Sanitary Service, which had some good provisions to benefit the agency, such as Marin Sanitary Service, you know, providing all the bins and removing all the bins from the quarterly cleaning of the system. That had a budget savings of, you know, tens of thousands of dollars each year. And, you know, something that for me that was a great achievement was working with, you know, the managers and the ad hoc committee to, you know, revise and update the JPA, which has been adopted and executed by everybody. Then under goal 5, you know, we presented a succession plan a couple times to the board over last year, one for the maintenance department and one for operations, and we've kind of initiated both of those and have, you know, several new employees, which has been great. And then under goal 6, you know, Kate produced a really nice benefit reference guide, which we handed out, you know, last month for you guys to take a look at. And then lastly, we right now are setting up an agency Facebook page, and Kate's actually leading that effort also.
Be careful.
Yeah.
So that's my report. A lot of this really good work happened over the last year. And this is just information. I can answer any questions you all have on the report.
Tom. Well, I had a comment. You know, I read this and I thought, gee, you know, there's complete and then there's ongoing. And I thought, well, gee, ongoing isn't as good as complete. But that's wrong. And so I talked to Jason about it, and I was thinking we could use I'm always into terminology, but you know, instead of like ongoing for some of these, it's continuous. You know, we do it.
And then, established.
You know, or something
in
like
progress.
That.
In progress.
And then in progress means
not done
we
yet.
Haven't completed it or something, you know. So I was just thinking, you know, some term like continuous or, you know, and then have something like in progress. And I was just telling Jason, because it looked to me like the ongoing wasn't as good as the complete. And yet, no, wait, it's what we're doing all the time. And it's a goal.
Yeah, some
we
things
meet
are
our permit requirements. It's all ongoing.
Yeah, it's always going to be happening. Well, other things are more like project specific, and there's a start date and an end date, so it's in progress. It's still in progress at the end of the fiscal year. It will be part of the next year's plan. So we could add another definition.
Yeah, try that.
Another term, and we could actually put those in the staff report with definitions for next time. So it's a little clearer.
Could we also have one like better than completed, like nailed it?
Well, under budget, like the limb and the whim.
And emojis. And emojis.
I was getting the one on emoji too.
Just not the little good one. Yeah.
Where was the barbecue? That's what I didn't know. Employee barbecue. Which one?
Yeah, that's in
June 30.
In the June, right?
Oh yeah, it's the June 27th.
22nd. That's
all right. And you're all invited.
Oh good.
All right. I move that we accept the report with on the well-deserved accolades.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Any member of the public like to speak to this? See none. There's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That carries unanimously. Thank you. Excellent report, and I think it's very impressive.
Thank you. I'll pass that on to the planning committee.
All righty. Agenda item 8, agency representatives for the West America Bank signature card.
Okay, thank you, Chair. First, so West America is our the bank we use for a checking account. And back in 2015, we had board members on the signature card, and we had a couple staff members. And I think the entire time I've been a general manager, we never had a board member come in and sign a check. So we had a change in some staff. So we came to the board, and we suggested. Maybe we should have some new board members, some additional staff, and the board discussed it, and they said, well, why don't we just have staff be on the signature card, since you guys are always signing the checks anyways. So that was a decision, so we added, you know, the environmental services manager and the technical service manager, well, the engineering manager at the time, to the signature card, and everything worked out great. Then Rob Cole, you know, retired, and we had a reorganization, and we created the technical service department and moved environmental services within that. So then we had three on the signature card. Then with Brian Thomas, you know, accepting the job at Delta Diablo, now we only have two people that can sign checks until we have that next, you know, until the recruitment's closed. So I started with finance, and they said, geez, you know, you're going to go on some vacations this summer. Chris is going on vacations. During that time, we'll only have one person here to sign checks. And I said, well, I can go to the board and see if, you know, they want to add a board member or two to the signature card for these kind of rare events where we don't have the staff and there's some really important checks that we have to sign. That staff could call a board member. So that's why this is before the board tonight.
Yes, very bad.
We still have a checkbook.
We have a checkbook.
Efficiencies.
I just signed checks before you guys got here.
Really?
Yeah.
We need to update that system. You should be able to just use ACH out there.
Well, we do use ACH for a lot of things, and that started with, you know, the direct deposit for, you know, employee payroll checks, and then for board member stipends, ACH. And if you look in the check disbursement register, the ACH list is growing.
Yeah.
So, like, now, you know, our payments to, you know, CalPERS for medical, CalPERS for retirement, other benefit providers, is all done by ACH. Mm-hmm. But we still process checks.
You want to use Bitcoin, don't you?
Yes.
There's a new
platform. Yeah, I can get some merchant services.
Put that in the FY19 business plan, right?
Yeah.
Forgive my ignorance, but how are authorizations done over an automated ACH system in an agency such as this?
You log in?
So you have two users, one who sets up the payments as if they were, like, printing the checks, but It's online. They set them up, and then you would log in under your user ID and then authorize them. Is that how it goes?
That's how we do a wire transfer.
Yeah. Okay.
But for ECH, it goes through the same approval process that we have for any type of an accounts payable transaction.
Okay.
So, you know, like, for example, we'll get an invoice. Our staff that order the material, they'll look at the purchase order. They'll attach it to the invoice. We have a special design stamp with a stamp on it. The person will approve it, verifying everything was delivered and is here. Then that will go to the department manager usually, and they will review it. They'll sign off on it. Then for, you know, payments greater than $5,000, then I approve those. And then the account administrator in the budget process, they're the one that, you know, puts in the general ledger account number and does that initial review. So there's a multi-step process to approve an invoice. Then what the accounting staff does is they have the stack of the invoices. Mm-hmm. Then they either just process those through ACH or they'll issue a check. So then if you get the checks, then I'll get a stack of checks and I'll sign the checks, or the, you know, other staff person or maybe board member will sign the checks.
Do you do wires as well?
You know, once in a while. So
we
wire, you know, our bond, you know, semi-annual bond payments to the bond trustee. Mm-hmm. And that's an onerous process, doing a wire transfer through the West America Bank. But that's, you know, kind of what you're describing, is that it gets initiated by an accounting staff person. Then someone with the approval authority has to go into the bank's website to verify things and approve it. Since we do that so infrequently for security reasons, then we have to go in and change our password. And that's through a whole other administrative, you know, interface. And usually that doesn't work, so we have to call them. And it takes every 6 months I spend about 45 minutes approving the wire transfer because of the bank security protocols.
Yeah.
Where's your next project?
But notwithstanding the fact
maybe half an hour, not 45 minutes.
We maybe ought to get into the next generation of this. You're going to be gone, and so there's only going to be one check signer, for example.
Well, I just signed all the checks, so we're good for a couple of weeks.
Oh, okay.
We got it covered. That's all.
Yes, yes.
But I would move that the chair be added as a signatory to the checking account.
And that would be fine. Or would we want it to be secretary or something?
I think Jason said he wants somebody that's around and isn't
right.
working, because it needs to be during a working.
Yeah, like maybe, you know, if you have it, say, the board chair, say the board takes action, and it's in the minutes, okay, it's, you know, it's Jason, it's Chris, and the new technical service manager, whatever the name that is, and the board chair. If we rotate board chairs every July, then the new board chair has to go to the bank, and they have to fill out the personal, you know, information sheet. Then usually the bank rep comes to the board meeting just so they can see the vote and get the signatures. It's a whole little process. But if it's just one, if it's like, say, Tom Gaffney is approved by the board, then his name is on the signature card and it's always on there. But if it's a officer, then it could change, which is okay. It just,
and I would say, Cordon process at its next, SD2 at its next council meeting, will be deciding if they're going to reappoint me to represent SD2 on CMSA. It is looking likely that I will be reappointed for at least 6 months, but we're getting two new council members, and I don't know what's going to happen after December.
We can help you out. You tell them that you have to sign the checks.
Anyway, so I just don't know what my personal situation will be after December. Although I think they like me, but I don't know.
I have ultimate confidence.
So, Tom, would you be willing to do it?
Sure.
So moved.
Oh, but you could do it. We could both be on it, maybe.
Well, no.
I'm happy to do it.
The devil's the complications.
Okay.
Let's just make it you.
It sounds like it's complicated enough.
And hopefully you will not be called on to do it. I would think that...
No. Probably.
Yeah.
And do I have to get a bond? Do you get a bond for me? Or?
We would contact CSRMA and get a public official bond for you.
I think I'm bonded.
That's a requirement of the JPA, that all check signers are bonded.
Okay. Just remember those words, Tom.
What words are they?
Your name's bond. The freaking check. James Bond.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak to this? Okay. Mary Beth made a motion. Was there...
Second.
Okay, thank you, Michael. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? No, you got it. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate you doing that.
Thanks, Tom.
All right. Agenda item 9, proposed budget for the upcoming fiscal year.
Okay, so enclosing agenda packet is the proposed, or we also internally call the final draft FY19 budget. It's essentially, the numbers are essentially the same as what you saw in the draft budget, the May meeting that I summarized during my PowerPoint presentation. You know, the staff that are in charge of the different budget accounts, they reviewed the projections for the fiscal year, which next year's accounts are based on, and they thought those were pretty sound. So essentially nothing in the expenditure budget changed. The only thing to note in the revenue side is that due to one of our three environmental services analysts being on a medical leave over the last essentially 19 months, that we haven't had the resources to do as many source control inspections for all the contract agency we have contracts with. So the revenue was less this year for those small revenue accounts. So we're projecting out a smaller revenue next year. So that was a little change from the draft budget. Then noted in the staff report, there were a few minor shifts in the capital budget. There's a couple projects this year that weren't initiated, so we moved those to next year. So there's dollars for those now. Those are like $25,000 each. But ultimately, for fiscal year 19, the budget's been reduced by about $100,000 on the CIP side. And then, you know, some projects were moved to FY20. So that's essentially it. And then what we highlighted last time is, historically, for the last 15 years, we produced, you know, the numerical budget, you know, draft in May. Then we'll finalize that, bring it to the board in June for adoption. And then we prepare, you know, the front end, all the GFOA narrative, which includes information about the agency and, you know, a lot of the information also that's in the CAFR about, you know, the largest employers and some performance metrics about the agency. That's a big portion of this front section. And that meets all the requirements for the GFOA for their Distinguished Budget Presentation Award. So Ken, earlier this year, proposed, well, how about we just start the budget development process sooner and get it all done by June instead of have the numerical one completed, then staff working on, you know, the performance basis and the metrics and the narrative type of write-ups. And we said that sounds great. Do some staff time, you know, later in the summer, early fall, and it got done. So it's just great work by the account administrators and the managers, and in particular the finance staff that prepared this. So staff's recommendation is to adopt it.
Any questions? Tom?
Well, I went through it in detail, and I really liked it, having the information up front. I thought that was, you know, very cool. And by the time we were getting the GFOA version, we were sick of the budget, you know, so you don't see it. So it's a good idea to do it at one time and just get the data. That's an efficient way to do it. And, you know, Jason told us that the capital budget, there was some adjustments. That happens to every single capital CIP. We're going to have adjustments as we go, but that's fine.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Thank you for all the work.
Yeah,
great work. And once again, it's visually very attractive, easy to read. Thank you. I anticipate the agency will be receiving another award.
Hope so. Thank you for the nice comments.
Any member of the public like to speak to this? Okay. Bring it back. Would you like to make a motion?
I'd like to make a motion that we approve and adopt the final proposed budget for fiscal year 2018-19 as presented.
I'll second that.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. That was unanimous.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, North Bay Watershed Association. I'm really sorry I had a sick child and had to skip that. So, and Michael wasn't there, and Jason wasn't there, and we'll give you an update next time after reading the minutes. So, apologies for that. Oral reports by commissioners, agenda item 11. Anybody? And let's move on to general manager.
Yeah, just a couple things. Some of these we've already talked about. A couple personnel matters. You know, we created the assistant operations supervisor position, part of our operations succession plan, and we promoted lead operator Alan Berlay into that position. He was pretty excited about that. That was after internal improvements, and we had three people applying for that. Amy Huang was promoted to an associate engineer position. We created that job description a couple months ago. And we hired the new laboratory analyst that Mark referred to, and his name is Cunning Zhu. And he'll be starting on July 16th. And lastly, in 2014, CSRMA, which is our insurance provider risk management company, they prepared for the first time a big risk control survey, which had 650 risk control questions in 20 or 30 different risk control categories and areas. It was really onerous to work through the process of completing that and the interface for it. They made big improvements when they rolled out the second time. Now it's all web-based. So we updated our survey information for 2018 and met with the risk control manager. And this is kind of a snapshot of our results here, with CMSA being the green lines, and all the other members within CSRMA, there's 60 other wastewater agency members, being the blue lines. So you can see that we're doing pretty good compared to a lot of the membership in terms of meeting the objectives of the risk control programs of CSRMA. And we talked about some of these areas where we're a little lower, where we have the orange bars, and a couple of those items will be addressed in our fiscal year 19 business plan, such as on the last page with that safety culture. So we'll be conducting a safety culture survey for the staff in FY19. And public tours, you see on the last page too, that's at 14%. That's because CSRMA, they're following this international standard where if you get public tours, then your railing around tanks and on ledges should be vertical railing, 4-inch spacing. And no wastewater water agency I know has railing like that. It's usually horizontal railing, a foot apart. So they had that listed, so we answered no to that one.
So the reason it's 14%, though, is like under public tours, there's about 12 questions or 7 questions. So you're yes, 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 but you're no on one. Is that
that's
the way it works, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Because I was wondering the percentages.
It's just based on your yes and no answers. And there's a lot of the questions that weren't really applicable to us, and those were focused more on if you have a collection system and open cut trenching and things like that. Anyways, I just wanted to share this with the board because I'm on the CSRMA executive board, and we've told our risk manager, hey, if we're going to have agencies fill out the survey, they should share it with their governing boards so they understand, how complex and comprehensive the risk control programs are. I was going to bring the 653 questions and show you guys, but maybe some.
Thank you for not.
Bar graphs instead. Anyway, that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Next scheduled meeting is Tuesday, July 10th, 7 o'clock. See you then. If nothing else, meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Finish that packing.
Yeah, have a good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, hello.